Safety Act and a call for Meta to respond. Annetta Felix.
I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nick, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features sustainable agriculture dissected. Africa Now is next. Welcome to Sharm Wisdom Tali. The music in the background is Del Sasa by Cannibal Adlai Quintet. Remembering Cannibal Adlai's birthday, which is September 15. Last week, between August 30 and September 5, corporate executives, heads of state, and other government representatives, donors, and others met in Dakar, Senegal, at the Africa Food Systems Forum 2025 Summit, formerly known as the African Green Revolution Forum, AGRF. The conference, entitled Leading Collaboration, Innovation, and the Implementation of Agri-Food Systems Transformations, touts the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, also known as AGRA, an initiative funded by major world foundations, multinational corporations, and others. As we noted in a past show, entitled Africa and Food Security Insecurity, in an age of planetary crisis, farmers, civic society organizations, agriculture experts have been very critical of the initiative as it is seen as a continuation of dependency on multinational corporations and northern donor nations. As the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, together with West African partners in the 3AO platform, revealed in their investigative report entitled Challenging the Green Revolution, Exposing AGRA's Undue Influence on African Agricultural Policies, on September 2nd, that, quote, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, AGRA, heavily funded by the Gates Foundation, has shifted the strategy from working with farmers to steering agricultural policies across the continent, often behind closed doors and at the expense of food sovereignty, agroecology, and democratic governance, close quote. The show today dissects sustainable agriculture, focusing on the meaning of sustainable agriculture, traditional African farming structure, the impact of colonialism and multinational corporations on African farming, food security, the current wave of sustainable agriculture on the African continent, and more. The conversation features longtime activist Brima Conte, who is the founder and CEO of Sustain Salon. Here's my recent conversation with Brima Conte. Brima Conte, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you're here with us from Paris for a few weeks.
I've just moved to London.
In London, okay. Yeah, and then so great that you're able to take part in this conversation. We're sitting here in Washington, D.C. Actually, we're in the Sankofa, where we're having this conversation. And if you could just briefly tell us who you are, since this is the first time for you to be on our airwave, so that people know where we're coming from, and then start from there.
Okay, thank you, as I said, for having me. My name is Brima Conte, born in Sierra Leone and educated in Sierra Leone, the Ivory Coast, Morocco, and eventually France. I've been active on issues pertaining to people of African descent in Europe, fighting racism, of late I decided that we need to roll our sleeves to fight back the issues around poverty on the continent.
Thank you. And some of the things that you did in the past, you used to be in the Washington, D.C. area. So what were some of the things that you worked on in terms of...
I shared a panel with Danny Glover, Ari Belafonte on Trans-Africa issues. I have been like the connecting link for loads of African Americans here, scholars, activists in Europe. We work together with African Americans, scholars and activists on issues around racism globally, World Conference Against Racism. And proud to say, like I'm quoted, I'm one of the quoted contributors to the books written by Dr. Clarence Luzan, who is here. Whether you give him as many books because we speak very often. So this trip is a connecting trip, reconnecting trip, because there was a time I cut off because I went to Sierra Leone and I had to revive my situation in Europe. And so I had to do less traveling. But now it's back. And it's back through an instrument that I think is the right instrument I've created out of all these troubles, which is Sustain Salon Company Limited, a social enterprise devoted to pushing for sustainable projects and actions in various areas, whether it's agriculture, energy, whether it's sustainable building, whether it is around sustainable cultural practices and policies oriented in sustainable development. So,
yeah, and we'll get into the weeds of sustainable agriculture, particularly as we're near the harvest time here in the Northern Hemisphere in the United States, so speaking the United States and, of course, Europe as well. And in most of the Southern Hemisphere now, they're getting ready to plant. Of course, in other, you know, some countries like Ghana, Kenya, and others have two planting seasons, so two rainy seasons. Some countries have two. Oh, Congo, of course, there's rains the whole year round. So, yeah, we can plant all year. And whereas... But at least in general terms, you have the one side of the world is about to harvest, and then the other side is starting to plant. So it's a good time to talk about sustainable agriculture. When sustainable agriculture, what is the general meaning of that, of sustainable agriculture?
Well, I generally refrain from giving broad theoretical construct. I look at what we do with our farmers on the ground.
But let's just say what is the meaning, and then we can get into specifics.
To sustain means to be able to do and organize within the means and riches of what you have. Not to live above your means or below your means, but you manage. And you make sure there is interaction between the various elements that you bring, whether it's water, the soil, the food, the means of production, the means of picking up. And so it also depends on the area. When you are talking about the north, I see some one side of thing. When you, for us in the south, it's a different thing.
And then when we... So we're talking about sustainable agriculture is on that specific sustainability of sustainable agriculture. What is your interpretation of that, that meaning?
Okay. For example, the sustainable agriculture we practice on the ground in Sierra Leone, now Guinea, Liberia, and counting, we say, can we afford poisonous, I call it deliberately, poisonous chemical fertilizer? No. Because you end up creating a mafia system where the rich can grab it all, the poor, nothing. So, forget it. And I will quote the Zimbabwean Minister of Agriculture who says, fertilizer is a colonial construct. So, what do? where we look around us and we have so many elements which we can use to develop our agriculture. Now, scaling up means you need to introduce other elements which will help you scale up. But you need to go steady and slow, I would say, in our local balance. You can take up, cow dung, you can take up dead leaves, you can take up, from your organic elements within you, you build yourself up. And that is one. Now, the use of water, from the West, it is, irrigate, splash, and so forth. Do you want to waste that lot of water? Is that what you need? Okay? Take the interaction between the elements. Let's take a crop like oil palm. Okay? You look at the oil palm, people tend to see, okay, you extract the oil, the red oil. What do? You extract, you use, that waste is called, some say chaff, I don't know the right word. You can use that for fuel to cook. Okay? The nut inside, it has specific oil which can be used on motorbikes. Right? When you crush that nut, it leaves you with other so-called waste. No, don't throw. That's food for chickens, goats, pigs, etc. Right? Now, let's come to the hard outer shell, which is strong. You crush it, and that's where we are. It becomes what? Organic charcoal. And you and I know that we African people, generally, we don't eat food that is not well cooked. The question of deforestation because of using wood charcoal, you cut it down. If you cut it down, you allow the trees to grow. If the trees grow, that brings what?
When you mean cut it down, you mean less use of the
less
trees.
Less use. Yeah. Because why should you? It doesn't have smoke, by the way.
So this is using of the, the coconut.
You can use the coconut.
Or the palm.
That's it. We call them energy-yielding crops. So there are some people within our midst who are already talking about where people say bioenergy. That's the bioenergy. Some people say, okay, let's call it agri-energy. Agri-energy. So we study around energy-yielding crops. The cashew nut, the coconut, the palm nut, the corn, the crops. In fact, we know of some villages in Uganda who produce electricity for their village with corn crops. So that's the meaning of sustain, right? And we go back to the people, you cut down deforestation. The consequence is you allow trees to grow, climate change, more rains. Right? So it is, we say, let's bring it down to the level our people in the rural areas understand. That's how we operate. Right? So we have a whole agriculture. It's an agriculture. We say food, energy, water. These three things are interconnected. The interconnection has to be permanent in sustainability. Otherwise, you're just wasting time.
And when you say we, who's the we?
Well, we have a company called Sustain Salon Limited. I started in Salon. 4 years down the line, Guineans say they want us. So we are also now in Guinea. And another year down Liberia, say, hey, we want this. And we are getting more, including, it will surprise you, we have one of your sisters from Malawi who's a senior lecturer in Sweden, and we've been talking. And when I showed her, I had a meeting with James Poe, And she said, oh, we should take this brother to Malawi. I said, don't worry, it is happening now. Yeah. So we are actually growing we're happy. And so we build this model around, because you learn when you start interacting. So, you know, we say, okay, first and foremost is FEW, everybody, for the rural area, food, energy, water. Number two, we realize that we need farm tech tools and equipment. Because you're not going to bring the combined harvester as a tractor. That's a dream. Do with what you have. And we say we should establish farm tech tools and equipment for to sell, to provide. These tools should be there for the farmers. Should not go to the traders, whatsoever. No, should be there. Two, that's the farm tech tools. Three, we need a school. Because what we are talking in this studio, what we need to be showing and going to the villages, rural areas, and interact with our people in our local languages, right? And so that's the school, right? And we now we're in the era of social media. If you don't have your own social media tools, you know, so we have a social media component with videos for now. We'll soon grade it up to the level. And then comes the fundamental point of all these conversations, sustainability, is about what? Why do farmers go to the farm? Why do they do this? It's what people call poverty reduction. And as you know, there is no social welfare ministry in our rural areas. So you come in with ideas, you have to take the responsibility. So we decide to have point number, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a social welfare safety valve name for because you can be walking on planting corn in one area and they'll call you, oh, some accident happened here, you need to give money, etc., etc.
And again, that's Brima Conti. He is the founder and CEO of Sustain Salon. And we are looking at sustainable agriculture. As you're talking about sustainable agriculture, and there's a definition, as we were talking, we mentioned organic the farming in particular, which is the essence of this discussion that I'm getting from you. It also brings to us back to traditional system in the Africa of cooperative farming, which is because this, as you know, this when people talk about organic farm, the African farmers were the original organic farmers, and when we're talking about in today's we're talking about how there's this thing about sustainable agriculture. Before talking about that. And you were saying that you work the people in the speaking to them in the native languages and all that. Mm-hmm. Sorry for the long a long question. Does this bring back going back to the traditional farming of cooperative farming, which people have done?
Well, this has disappeared in time since independence.
Colonization helped it disappear, and independence helped it disappear with the advent of plantations and things like that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So again, that is why we have our model. That's why we attracted Guinea and Liberia and others. We say, you are not working for us. Let's start there. The piece of land on which you designate to us to work belongs to you, your family, your community, your people. So we, Sustain Salon, come up with reasonable finances required to support project. Let's say we plant corn. The plantation belongs to you and Sustenance alone. You're not working for Sustenance alone only. We are working for each other. And we transfer, we make sure that the ownership system model makes you responsible. You are co-owner for that particular area. So you have responsibility. And of course, you know if it grows well and so forth, that's heritage for your children. And we keep this conversation regularly to make people understand, because there's been a lot of toxic brainwashing going among our people. The effect, what we realize, because when we started, there was a lot of stealing, rip-off, and so forth, dishonesty. And we say we have to be honest. Why? This is what it leads to. It makes you become a credible owner of something that you work for. It is your money. So the question might come, I don't want to preempt to make your question, I'll let you do the interview, because we build around that model, and it's not only in one part of the country, we're all over the country. Now we're in Guinea. We have been awarded, given office in front of the airport in Conakry. So we create a system whereby we make farmers become owners and responsible, and with the goal, with projection to look ahead, we all grow together. So that is what we do.
And beyond even, because I don't want to just focus on Sustenance, but beyond even this one Sustenance alone, but in beyond the, in terms of the sustainability of agriculture, because it's like cooperative farming, mm-hmm. the tone with it's in tune with what nature talks about, which is mm-hmm. the diversity mm-hmm. of crops mm-hmm. and people of different skills working together, mm-hmm. Not just one talent or one crop, mm-hmm. which is what we've sort of inherited with colonization, with the cash crop system,
yeah.
where you have just one crop mm-hmm. in the field. And then we have one crop for, and also a crop which you can't use
yes.
most of the time. You can't eat it. Whether you're growing tobacco, you can't eat it. Well, with tea, you can maybe have tea, but it's not for the people there.
No.
It's for somebody else
okay.
outside.
Okay.
And so I'm saying that, beyond even, in the broad sense, as we're talking about sustainable agriculture, do you see that one of the goals of sustainable agriculture, beyond your perspective, is really going back to that diversity, both of the nature, which diversity of crops, but also diversity of using of human talents?
One of the things which colonization and post-colonization did was to destroy, deconstruct, and destabilize the entire agricultural system as how nature, God and man, and our environment would love us to be. That's it. And so had you, like when you're talking of monocrop, right? That's why I said we do food, energy, and water. We didn't hear about cash crops, right? So you grow food. And food means what you eat in your area. And we say you can't live on one crop as food alone, because that's another deconstruction we operate. No, we have two planting seasons. That's what you were trying to say. So for each planting season, two crops. Rice and yam, beans, and two crops. Okay? Then we say you must have animal production. It's either chicken, pigs, goats, cows, whatever. And then we say that's the one part of animal production. You also do fish farming. Okay? So that brings abundant food already there. Then we go to the cash crops. What we do is you look at your area. These things grow naturally. So if you have to introduce some system where we do some introduction of modern farming, maybe plantation or whatever, we limit the damage to the flora and fauna of the area. So that's your cash crop. And again, nature grants Africa with abundant resources. So it's not going to be one. You do two. And then sustainability means also there has to be some cash flows running around. How is the internal market food system operating? Why should we have abundant layers of middlemen operating, going between farmers? Okay, you, the farmers, since you have a cooperative, there are women, there are men, and so forth. Can we build that trust and confidence among ourselves? And we've started, and it's working. So, because we are doing internal trading, there's always some cash around to arrange you for your day-to-day activities. And so, then we come to climate change. What is it we do? We say, in some of our societies, cultures, if you go to the forest, you cut, fell down a tree, you plant two. That's the natural law in there. Before even we talk begins, it was okay. We need the forest. We also need the wood, the trees, and whatever building. There is a building spree going on. So what you do? Rationalize that the farmer having all this food, this and that, he needs the trees for the rains to fall. So he should integrate in his practice tree planting as a agro-business model. You can allow to cut after collectively 2-3 years, cut down, and that brings some cash. And that, you know, but you also understand that once you cut, you have to plant. Go on. So, this is the, because we found when we started, and we're still finding loads and loads of problems, you know, cataloging and piled upon one another for years, to the extent that the African rural farmer is almost, made obsolete, and he has to listen to directives coming from conflicting offices who don't know what they're doing, etc. So this is our own way of saying, look, we're in here, not to waste time. And we tried as much as possible also the funding aspect, because people, we realized that no, we can stand on our own with minimum cost or build up and continue. When we started, people were laughing. Today, you know, I was invited by Dr. Clarence, Mr. Joe Beasley, and others, because they had, you know, so okay, come and let us know what you're doing.
Who is Clarence?
Clarence Luzan is a professor of political science at Howard University. He's got people working on Africa, who have been to Africa, and they are here, they're in Washington, D.C., they're in Atlanta, and I had planned to go to Tuskegee, because the Tuskegee experiment, we need it. We need to see how we can integrate.
When you say Tuskegee experiment, be clarified, because there is a infamous Tuskegee experiment, not that one, but you're talking about that.
I'm not talking about a bad things you're that happen in Tuskegee.
You're talking about the agriculture.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Because you have to be very clear.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarity. I'm not talking about the bad things that happen around Tuskegee. You know, but I just get the feeling that it was maybe on purpose or whatever. But this is a famous institute that we believe, forget about the airmen that was in Europe. I know groundnut is all over West Africa, okay? And I've been there. I went to Tuskegee in 1996, and I went to the nutrition department. There are methods which they have developed over the years with food, which we believe are useful for us, okay? And knowing the philosophy of what Tuskegee was, I think this is the right time, you know. So that's the thing, you know.
You listened to a recent conversation with longtime activist Brima Conte, who's the founder and CEO of Sustain Salon. And the conversation is dissecting sustainable agriculture. The music in the background is Kurima by Chinoiso Marere, and Kurima means plowing or farming in Shona. You listen to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation.
As we're talking about this sustainable agriculture, and we talked about how this is going back to the traditional form of farming in the our villages, as we've done in the past, and unfortunately, when you look at how governments have done agriculture policy, they never interjected the indigenous knowledge. So, do you see one of the things that, as we're looking at, as we're really thinking through sustainable agriculture, that this will also be a opportune way of making sure we continue indigenous seeds variety, which have survived that environment and they're meaningful. For instance, you know, we're really not millet. Maize was imported from outside, and we have, and then millet and sorghum were the traditional crops. Do you see that that sustainable agriculture also plays that role in making sure those varieties survive?
Well, I think a number of countries are making heavy strides in that direction. And farmer groups, not governments. Let's make it very clear. If we look at the whole of East Africa, where we get a lot of inspiration from, you see cooperative groups, many groups, in Kenya, in Uganda, and Tanzania, including how to adapt and confront the challenges of the day. For example, we had training from Kenyan irrigation specialists online with our farmers in Sierra Leone, and we want to expand this to Liberia and Guinea. If I'm to talk about agriculture and fertilizer, you see there's a whole movement around organic agriculture in Zimbabwe, a movement not controlled by the government. We in Sierra Leone had to purchase a library, agricultural library, from the Zimbabweans. We know they had it. So, and the thinking is, like I said, forget about the colonial construct. People are looking other areas in the East. Okay. The Kenyans, Ugandans, and Tanzanians, we noticed, they have the equipment from the East, because they are eastward. Sometimes Malaysia, sometimes Indonesia, China. And we say, okay, between what is in West Africa, we say, well, we should do like our brothers. So there is that movement towards agriculture as we used to be, integration of traditional knowledge. For example, we start to question some concepts. Well, what is regenerative agriculture? And we say, okay, does this exist? Oh, it should exist. Well, let us interrogate our traditional farmers. See, how do you do this process? How do you do regenerative agriculture in Shona, in Malenke, in Bambara? It must exist, okay? And perhaps, like we have come to understand now, with, you know, organic fertilizers and so forth, it is something we have been doing. Simply, we've been distracted, looking other ways, but it's there, right? Okay, I'll give you an example, which I was, you know, I lived through, but I also saw it in Morocco. I studied there for 2 years, you know. They have the people who live in the Atlas region. And there was a World Bank project to do some irrigation somewhere in the other part of the valley. So the World Bank sent experts, leaders, and so forth all over. To they brought people from Mexico, engineers, money, to help the other side to have irrigation. And the Moroccans said, well, look, we have the people here, right here. They took them to FAO. These are villagers. And with simple techniques, they showed them how you can irrigate the other part. So,
things they've been doing for centuries.
Of course. So the knowledge is there. And that's why we mentioned, I said, we have a school. That school, we make sure that traditional knowledge is used. And because of that school, we forget about agriculture can not only produce energy, but also medicine, healing. So you heal hunger, well, medicine.
And that's what the traditional healers use.
They use the roots. Call them traditional healers, medicine men, what have you.
But they're doctors.
Well, they're doctors, right? The plants, the same plants that are used to transform into codeine, nicotine, or whatever, whatever.
Yeah, because people forget it takes training to do that. Yeah. You don't just pick up any root.
Right.
You don't have,
right. You see, this is why if you look at coffee, which is a growing commodity today all over. Americans love coffee. There is a way of picking coffee to conserve the flavor, the aroma, and so forth. If you go with your machine, then you go with the leaves, and you have to separate and so forth. At the end of the day, coffee becomes very bitter. So you have to put sugar and milk. We produce, you know, we were not used to producing sugar. We use honey. Huh? So these are all the principles that bring down to the sustainability actually is harmonizing with nature, harmonizing our people with agriculture, and the practices which we use are best suited for our areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that's, and I'm optimistic with the wave of actions taking place, farmers taking control. Yes, in various countries. So,
and do you think also, you know, the COVID epidemic also helped us to look at indigenous crops, because you know, the world, transportation was shut down. You couldn't get ships and all that to transport the wheat and things. So You know, I saw some reports of in Zimbabwe where they were going back to growing soy gum to make flour for bread. Do you think that's also kind of helping that crisis helped rejuvenate looking at indigenous ways and crops for sustainability? Yeah,
you're right. You see, necessity is the mother of invention. So, and I will add to COVID, Ukraine, the war in Ukraine, shut down the grain supplies. Okay? I know of people in Togo, Benin, and so making flour from cassava and bread.
Which they used to do in the past.
Otherwise, you see, which they used to import from France.
Yeah. So, but I'm saying that in the past, before the entrenchment of colonization and the multinational corporations, our foremothers used to use these flowers.
Yes.
And they would dry and things like
that. So it's there. And then what needs to is technology. And look, the people of Southeast Asia sort of maybe have seen this coming or saw this coming way before. So they are a little bit advanced in that area. And we see our brothers on the eastern coast of Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, moving forward, following suit. So we're also copying, you know.
Yeah, when you say we are copying that on the west side, West Africa.
I'll be clear. Yeah. West Africa is a little behind compared to the nature and levels of agriculture in Eastern Africa and Southern Africa. But Southern Africa, what happened is, there was settler agriculture before Zimbabwe and Namibia and South Africa, the wave of independence at both. And people are realizing.
The settler agriculture didn't help the people. But
of course, they never wanted to care. Yeah. They didn't care. So now the people are taking control, taking ownership of their agriculture. And that's why the more radical ones you meet Zimbabwe, you say this is a colonial construct. Okay? And let's grow what we eat. Okay? And there's a large market inside. That's why we trade. The danger is when you have middlemen in between, then it does not work.
And again, that's Brima Conte. He is the founder and CEO of Sustain Salon. And we're looking at sustainable agriculture. And as you were talking about the middlemen, it also brings to the point of corporations. You know, when they see something happening, like how they did with the organic, the term organic farming, organic products, they hijacked the label.
Label aids,
and then and so-called washing, whitewashing, whatever, organic, the term. Do you see a danger also as sustainable agriculture catches fire, that you'll have these corporate interests lurking in the background because they have a lot of money that they'll be losing? Do you see them not trying to get into this sustainable agriculture for the wrong reason?
They're already in there. They are already in there. We see all kinds of sustainable labels. You go to the grocery, supermarkets, they're there. And so what we, the Africans, globally should be trying to do is how we create niches within the market, right? To occupy, and how we occupy space and control and move along those lines.
So you're talking about Pan-Africanism.
This is why I and a few other friends, we have this Sustain Salon. Is a Sierra Leone is my country of birth. I have to respect that. Excuse me. It's a tiny piece. So we have established in London, Sustain Africa Enterprises. Why enterprises? We want to come away from this is a farmer doing farm work. No, you are an agripreneur. That is, you do agriculture, but in an enterprising way, a socially enterprising way that brings back benefit to your community. Okay? And again, because we know the sustainable agriculture is not far away from all this climate change, poverty reduction, and so forth. These are the same levels. So we do agripreneur, but now we're also going to do ecopreneur. You are an entrepreneur of ecology. You fight against climate change in your own way. So that means, like we notice from the Kenyans and we copy from here, within the continent, not thinking of anybody from outside. Can we take these young boys who are felling trees for timber and so forth, we train them into tree planters? Because you sure getting your money, you know. We have lands and understood the game. We know how the game plays. Like, for instance, if you take coffee, cocoa, and tea, there are international festivals right now. There is one coming up in Morocco. You know about that? Okay. And if you look at the coffee supply chain, you see a whole lot of layers and layers and layers. It comes at a point where the line, you don't see any black thing anymore. No. You see? Likewise, on climate change, there are academic institutions in Europe and here, you know, on working specifically on climate change, poverty reduction. We are not there. So somebody called me the other day, you should go into this, climate change and poverty reduction. I said, yeah, thank you, but, you know, I'm not saying we should not shy away from international fora that help us. Well, we should go on our terms. We should do our homework. We should be, we don't want to repeat the story again. We're taking our exits. And our children and other grandchildren should be able to see, these are the institutions our forebears built for us. Now, why are we still bringing the sustainable? This was all they did to us. Slavery, colonialism, neocolonialism, and globalization. Sustainability, we are talking about it here because it was built on solid ground by our forebears. And so this is the nature of how we see sustainability globally on the continent.
And so you see the sustainable agriculture in the done in its truest form, where it's actually on the grassroots level, being really part and parcel of the Pan-Africanist movement in more concrete terms.
Of course, people are calling us now from different countries. Again, we have seen what we can do on the rhetorical level. I was in the anti-racism movement. I used to come, let's do it this way, and so forth. Okay. We had challenges. We made progress. But somewhere, coming from rural experience and going on to this level, I knew that once we don't have enough food on the table for the local people on the ground, we're not yet there. And if we in the diaspora want more respect, more, regard from those who look at us, we should be able to fix those problems there on the ground with them. Not bringing ideas, no, working with the people on the ground. Then they have enough to eat, they take care of their schools, they take care of their systems and institutions. Nobody will come and say, look, you are this, you are that, and that. No.
And what is your closing thoughts as we wrap up our discussion? What are some of the closing thoughts you have as we reflect on sustainable agriculture, particularly in the African context?
Well, it's a huge challenge, and we want as many people as possible, but on the lines which we think we have laid down. And I believe, I'm confident, because not the people, the way they respond, when you propose something good to them, they know, and they are ready to take it on board, and they move along with you, men, women, children, unemployed, right? And it's because, like I said in the past, you know, there has been a toxic, hugely toxic atmosphere from pre-colonial, colonial, and to this day. People take up office and they see these spaces as places to make money. Forget about what is going to happen on the ground, you know. And so what we have been trying to do is really to show the farmers, say, look, this is it. Now it's up to you, okay, to develop. And with modern technology, the diaspora and whosoever working on the ground, we should be able to monitor and work with it. Now, one particular thing around the U.S., I know the potential, the enormous potential this country and the diaspora here holds in terms of moving forward programs and projects. That's why I am very particular about collaboration with institutions such as Howard University, Tuskegee, and other areas, because it's important that what we are doing should be captured, structured, monitored, and explained by academics, not just us, all right? But also you look at the, you know, we work with, there are black farmers groups, cooperatives here. This is a connection. What Booker T. Washington did in Tuskegee, that dream of connecting with the continent, we can bring it into agriculture. So, and, you know, organizations, civil society organizations, whether it's Trans-Africa, whether it's anything, we believe we come together, the agriculture, sustainable agriculture is a possibility on the continent, and it will allow the local people to take control of their future.
Brima Conti, thank you very much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you.
You've just been listening to a recent conversation with longtime activist Brima Conti, who is the founder and CEO of Sustain Salon. And the conversation focused on dissecting sustainable agriculture. You can revisit the conversation on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is La Libertad, or Freedom in Spanish, by Eddie Plumeri. And we played that remembering Eddie Plumeri, who you might be aware joined the Ancestors a month ago on August 6. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shanana with Zain Al-Amin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and also has special spotlight on the plight of Palestinians in Gaza and beyond. And that's followed by the women's collective, Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by the Browder File with Tony Browder, and that's followed by Sojourner Truth with Nana Jamvi, which is followed by Combit Lakai with Eugenia Charles, which looks at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter, that's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nicella and Clea Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Funangonda, and our Africa World Now Project collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdeston. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. And we're going to leave you the closing song entitled Harvest for the World by the Isley Brothers. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Global condemnation of Israel's bombing of Qatar's capital Doha Tuesday, targeting Hamas negotiators. Hamas says its senior leadership was not hit, but five lower-ranking members were killed in the strike. Qatar called it a violation of international law. The European Union, France, Germany, Japan, Russia, the United Kingdom condemned the strike. The White House fell short of a full condemnation, but spokesperson Caroline Levitt said this.
Unilaterally bombing inside Qatar, a sovereign nation and close ally of the United States that is working very hard and bravely taking risks with us to broker peace, does not advance Israel or America's goals. However, eliminating Hamas, who have profited off the misery of those living in Gaza, is a worthy goal.
President Trump to deliver remarks today. He wrote on social media he wasn't given enough notice, but his envoy did warn Qatar of the strike. Qatar's Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said he was only notified after the strike occurred.
The attack happened at 3:46. The first call we had from an American official was at 3:56, which is 10 minutes after the attack.
He called the attack barbaric and an act of state terrorism to destabilize the region. In Gaza, five more Palestinians have starved to death in the last 24 hours, bringing the starvation death toll to 404, including 141 children. Israeli strikes killed at least 41 Palestinians in the same time frame. This as Israel's ordered a full evacuation of Gaza City ahead of a ground offensive to dispel some 1 million Palestinians to the Mawasi safe zone. The European Union's Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says she will pursue sanctions and a partial trade suspension against Israel over its war in Gaza. She spoke to the 27-nation bloc today.
Man-made famine can never be a weapon of war.
It follows Spain's announcement of an arms embargo against Israel and a ban on Israel's far-right ministers, Itamar Ben-Gvir, national security minister, and Bezalel Smotrich, finance minister, from entering the country. Poland says with the help of NATO allies, it shot down multiple Russian drones that entered its territory. The military described the incursion as an act of aggression carried out during a wave of Russian strikes on Ukraine. Russia said it did not target Poland. A federal judge has temporarily restricted the IRS from sharing confidential taxpayer data with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, without giving the court 24 hours notice. A group of small businesses, a low-income tax clinic, and two unions represented by Democracy Forward brought a lawsuit to prevent the sharing of that data. The IRS and ICE struck a deal this year to share immigrants' tax data for the purpose of identifying and deporting the undocumented. A motion to permanently stop the agencies from doing so still being considered by the courts. Protests planned at Missouri State Capitol today as the Republican-led House advanced a bill to redraw congressional maps Tuesday to favor Republican candidates. The move comes at President Trump's urging. The plan now moves to the state Senate and could give Republicans a shot at winning almost all of Missouri's House seats in Congress. The Missouri NAACP has sued to try to stop the special legislative session. Two former Meta researchers are blowing the whistle on how they say the social media company handles child safety on their platforms. Aneta Felix reports.
Former employees are accusing Meta of turning a blind eye to child safety issues on their virtual reality platform.
When our research uncovered that underage children using MetaVR in Germany were subject to demands for sex acts, nude photos, and other acts that no child should ever be exposed to, Meta demanded that we erase any evidence.
That's the voice of Jason Sadezan speaking at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing during his six-year tenure as a researcher for Meta. He says his work revealed not only the dark underbelly